Yeah, because with the translation we lose time. So even though we could translate ourselves, if everybody in the room speaks English, then the translation might not be needed. But I never know who will join us online and who will not. So this might be then after the session, we might discuss it with Lukasz. How to do it. I know that on Friday we'll have a person who will need it, but right now, for today at least, it seems the translation is not needed. And then we'll just keep it simple and just do not occupy Lukasz's time too much. After the session is over, then I'll chat with Lukasz a little bit. But thank you, Lukasz. For now, nobody joined the session who would need a translation. So I think for this morning session, we don't need you. The Dhamma talks afternoon, that will be always translated. So let's proceed to the interview session.
Jan, can you hear me?
Yes, Bante.
Okay, I can see you all.
Good, good. We are now here, six people. And a few more are on the way.
So hello, Bhante. Again, me, Claudia. Nice to see you again. Not to see, hear you again. And I'm very glad that you gave us another retreat. So I would like to report from yesterday the instruction that you gave us. So it seems for me it's about 50-50. Sometimes the mind is going into the past, sometimes it's going into the future. And I have noticed that usually in the sitting meditation, it is like only like a short flashback of a memory, like a snapshot or a photograph of some event. Sometimes it's something that I regret, that I forgot to do, or I should have done in a different way. But then immediately the mind starts to develop the story around it and is planning for the future. So it starts in the past, but then mind starts to plan how to correct the situation. Let's say I should call my mom to do it, or I should send an SMS to somebody. And sometimes it's only like a mind creation, like what would have been the situation if I would have reacted differently. So it's not really even future, it is just like a mind created story that cannot really happen. And in walking meditation, it's slightly more about the future. It's like the seeing is really triggering the thinking into the future, like what to do next, or I should do this, or next time I will remove something from the path, or what I see outside. But sometimes also the seeing is triggering the memories of the past, like, oh, 10 years back these trees were very small, and now they are so big, but the flowers are still the same. So sometimes also seeing will trigger the future, and sometimes it triggers the memories of the past. So then I started to watch also in the sitting meditation how the thinking starts. And in the sitting, it's very often hearing some sound, and that triggers the memory, and then it continues like with this planning or remembering or regretting. So that is my report from yesterday instruction. Thank you.
So that if I got correctly, you are reporting sitting and walking where the memory, the future, sounds and thinking, all these things are happening. Since you have been a meditator for a few times, you have some experience, whenever you are in a thought, if you know thought, do you know where to mind to bring back? Are you sure that where to bring it back?
Yes, very often. Usually, it comes directly to the body, and it's very relaxing just to watch the body how the tension is relieved. But because of your instruction, I let the mind a little bit to go into thinking and just watching whether it's past or future. So this time I let it a little bit longer in the thinking process just to observe it, like what is the content of the thought. But usually
I'm asking very sharp thing, that you are partly correct, but I am asking very sharply. You are in a thought, you are in a sound, you are in a memory, or in future. Under such circumstances, if Claudia comes to know that I am off the mind, I am eccentric, each and every time, is the mind sure where to come back? Where is the primary object and what is the primary object? Are you sure about?
Yes, sometimes it's very short time, but sometimes it's a little bit longer. But yes, the mind comes back again to watch the body,
the sensations of the body. Now the second question. Each time mind come back home, are you verifying it, whether it's still dreaming, still thinking, or really come back to the primary object?
Not always. Sometimes when the mind was a little more sleepy.
That is the point I am accusing you. So as far as you know, we have to come back. And mind also casually coming back. But you have to put a rubber stamp and put a signature. To say, yes, you were in a thought. And while in thought, you know you were in the thought. And you know we have to come back. You come back. Maybe in the stomach or in your touching point or the... breath, and that you have to assure, don't worry about the going out part, thinking, future, past, thoughts, sounds. But each time, mind you, each time, way back home is exactly the same. Whatever the outgoing objects. So you are talking and talking and talking and talking about the stories about going out. That means you are fertilizing it, you are facilitating it. What I am telling is, lead the mind to send kites, no problem. Each time coming back, the Buddha is assuring you, not the Dhammajiva Hamdru. Buddha is assuring you, way back home is exactly the same. There is no male, female. There is no, the content of the object is distracted. Way back home is exactly the same. And each time you have to spend few sentences. It was in a thought, because blah, 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 and I came to know and might immediately come back or after a while it come back. It came to the in-breath. It came to the out-breath. It came to the rising. It came to the falling. It came to the thighs. It came to the back. Whatever may be. That each time if you are, it is like welcoming a visitor, guest. Imagine you are in the inquiry or welcoming desk of the hotel. Each and everyone is a best customer. The most important person. You are talking about the going out visitors. You are leading the hotel bankruptcy. I am asking to think about coming back. Each time it is coming back, you must give the most welcoming and facilitating. And asking, what can I help you? How can I help you? Like, and try to report, Claudia will be a different person.
Yes, yes, Bhante, thank you. I understand. I thought that we should more focus now on the thinking process. So every time when the mind comes back, it's a very pleasant feeling of release. Like it's also the tension in the body is like released. And also the mind feels like really settling like a small marble or a ball settling in a hole. So it's very nice and satisfying feeling when the mind comes back from the thinking process. But sometimes it takes longer, sometimes it takes shorter. And also yesterday the mind was still very sleepy and very foggy.
For your interest sake, I would say, when the mind come back, it is like a coin tossed and come back on the earth, flat, settle down. Or you throw a rubber ball up there and it is bumping, 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 bumping and going to the lowermost position. So the bumping ball is indisciplined mind. The tossed coin is the disciplined mind. So you can check when it is coming back, is the mind happy to come back and settle down like a tossed coin or jumping, jumping, jumping. So you are observing yourself. It's the most hardcore self. This is myself. So let the mind to send kites, no problem. When the way back, see whether it is like a tossed coin or it's like a rubber ball. So Upanishadu says that whenever the coin is being tossed, whatever the angle, whatever the ramp you put, the coin knows how to settle. But instead, if you put a rubber ball, definitely is bumping, bumping, bumping and going to the lowermost. So I am waiting till Claudia to change from rubber ball to the toss coin.
Yes, yes, yes. But the mind is has a tendency to be the tossed coin, but at the moment it's a little bit bumping like the rubber ball. It's true. So I will continue. Thank you, Bhante.
Okay.
So, Bhante, let me report. I will be short. because as a organizer, I had a bit more busy day yesterday. But what is happening in my meditation is that I enjoy and appreciate the most the walking and the daily activities. During these daily activities, during the little works we have here and other daily activities, I try to be as much within the objects of touching or seeing or kind of like perceiving as it gets. And these are starting to be quite a strong moments. While in sitting, I'm too tired now. I need to start up the sitting a little bit. So the sitting meditations are sleepy and slow, and the mind is dull. But in the daily activities and in the walkings, and the mind is very alert. So that's where I focus my attention now to start the retreat in the moving meditation, not in the sitting meditation.
Yeah, so to give a general remarks, the dull situation may be an advanced situation whereby you are not taking any enthusiasm, you are not any craving, no desire, just the mind come back to the flat level. So that can be interpreted as a dull, boring and monotonous. And instead the walking is eventful, dramatic, and the day-to-day activities. It is good because you are not taking this as a tiring or you are taxing you. But the dull mind is the what you have to appreciate. Dull mind is the what you have to facilitate. Dull mind is the what you have to think you have earned. So when the mind and the mood become dull, can you observe it as if someone endowment? It's as if someone you earned. So that is the point where you have to have strategies to be with this boredom, to be with this monotonous, to be with this isolated and less listless and uncertainty kind of thing. And it is the opposite of desire, the opposite of affection, opposite of the raga. But when it happens, if you say it is bad, it is dull and it is monotonous, again and again you will go for active life or event full part, just like a child. So of course I understand my mental situation, climatic situation, food and some things, it make you dull. And meditation itself can make you dull. That is what I am going to highlight you. There you know how to facilitate it, how to be, how to understand. The best way is to take it as an endowment, take it as a result of your meditation. It's not a question for meditation, it's an answer from the meditation. So then on the maturity sets in the meditative life. Not that you are completely trying to be sit and wait. You do walking and day-to-day activities, but take the sitting and see how quickly mind become disinterested, how mind become dull, mind become monotonous, And that is a part and parcel of meditation. What do you say?
Yeah, I will do so.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward for the dull mind.
Yesterday when you are starting, you never introduced Lucas. So I just completely forgotten until 20 minutes. So you are not a good organizer.
My apologies. Yes, yeah. I forgot to tell you that Lukas is the translator.
Lukas is a good friend of mine. You don't know.
I know. You praised him on the last retreat. He's the computer guy who keeps on typing, so and he can go forever. You see, he translated even the 20-minute
talk without any problems. I wanted to thank not you, but Lukas.
That's why he's translating, because he's much better than me.
No, I am not saying like that, but I do not wish to have enemies. But I am telling you, Lukas is good, no more than that.
Yeah, that's true. Lukas is very good.
So you have to introduce me.
I'm glad we have him.
Venerable Dhammajiva is going to give a talk, and 5 minutes' time, Lukas will translate. Bhante, please stop your talk at 5 minutes' time, likewise. So that is the task of the organizer. Luckily, Lukas compensated.
That's true.
Okay?
Yes, Bhante, you're right. I forgot to say that. That's true.
So good. Never mind. Lukas, do you meditate? Yes, please, come.
So, Bhante, I would like to report the state. My sitting meditation is mostly pinging between the bodily tension sensation and the meditation object. So, I'm usually feeling tension in the body, so and then I go back to the observation of the breath, and it is pulled back again to the body, to the unpleasant feelings of the body. This is around the 90% of time I'm spending with the feelings of the body. And in the walking meditation, it's the opposite. In 90% of the time I'm spending with the thinking, and it's more like the ball effect you mentioned, that my mind is more spending the time with the thinking, and then even sometimes I notice that I'm trying to keep it in the thinking just to observe how unpleasant the thinking thoughts are, and then I go back to the observations of the touching of the feet of the ground.
So if I'm going to say that you are hating your body, you don't know how to love your body. So that is the secret.
Yeah, it's possible.
Wherever you sit, wherever you walk, whatever you do, see the, we call the dhinandhya comfortability. So you have to treat like how the mother is treating the first baby. The mother knows by mother knowledge. Baby do not know. Baby can only feel. The mother expert. So likewise, you have to treat the body, because it's a meditator's body. It's the most precious usage of your body, rather than any mechanical job or any kind of thing. So you have to give the maximum comfortability. And then ask the body, you are the master, I am consulting the body knowledge, am I comfortable? So then body will tell you, instead of entertaining the tension and the feelings and the visuals, just ask the body, are you happy? Are we friends? So then the body knowledge, so we are, whenever we become expert, we lost common sense as well as the body knowledge. Whenever we just simply be a beginner, we know how to sit. And when you look at very young toddlers, you see wherever it may be, it is in a very comfortable. When we become elderly, our moral situation and our relationship with others and kind of thing make our posture uncomfortable. So that you have to understand. You have to get the lesson from the beginner, get the lesson from the baby, get the lesson from the young animals, how free they are. And you see that whenever you get a tension and kind of thing, it's a common instruction. Just look at a cat. how nicely it is sleeping, how nicely it is sitting. So even the cat is going to the king's throne, king will never throw it away. If the dog is going to throw onto the throne, it will be killed. But the cat is giving a such a comfortable situation, even on the throne, even on your bed. No, because it is giving a comfortable feeling. Oh, look at a fish, tank of fish at your home, and you see how the fishes are moving. Very comfortably. So therefore, you in the Western people often put your body into action, but don't take care about the body. So therefore, you have to love your body and always ask the body from changing from posture to posture, or whenever you are going to have a same posture like sitting, walking, standing, sitting, lying, standing, like, just check. It is called proprioception in neurological science. Mind is always checking your bodily posture. And if it's uncomfortable, mind is sending signals. But we don't implement them, thinking in this place it is no good, in this moment it is no good, so you torture your body. But in meditation, I'm not asking you to move here and there and always change your posture. But I'm telling at the beginning, just sit in a very comfortable way and don't ask anyone, because you are the best person, the body is the best knowledge, to have the your own tone, your own in walking pace, in sitting, the comfortability, and that is a kind of a relationship with your body. So I hope definitely that will help reduce the tension and kind of thing. And if you need, let's say for 2 minutes time, if you need kind of a change, ask the body, are you going to make a suggestion? Yes. What is the suggestion? Stretch your leg. Do it in a slowly, mindfully and silently, and ask the body, are you more mindful than before the changes? So likewise, compromising. So then 90% will be 50-50 at least.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Hello, Bhante. This is Peter.
Your name?
Peter.
Peter. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so I want to report also quite a lot of thoughts, both in walking and sitting meditation. Mostly planning, but there are also some kind of regrets and counterfactuals. Yeah, like what would happen if I had done something differently. I also noticed quite a bit of sleepiness in the sitting meditation. For a while, I can kind of stay with the sleepiness and observe it as it is, but then, yeah, it becomes more and more difficult as time goes on. Yeah, I guess that's my report.
So going to the sleepiness as it happening as an accident quickly, or slowly, slowly you feel the slimy mind, the congealing mind, and go to the sleep?
Yeah, it's kind of gradual.
So when it is gradual happening, what happened to your primary object? So if you look at the sliminess sets in, the sleepiness sets in, there are a lot of interesting changes happening to your primary object. The trick is to distract you from your other primary object, distract your mindfulness. So therefore, if you go prepared, now the early signs of the sleepiness setting in. So therefore, can I look as it happens, as the distraction sets in, what happened to the primary object? So definitely, primary object is evolving, metamorphosis, changing its shape, changing its manners. So if you can, while observing the sleepiness, that I would say the early signs of the sleepiness, you can see the primary object is changing. So mindfulness is shifting from this changing mindfulness changing primary object that we call the impermanent nature of the primary object. Instead, you attraction go to the body. So therefore, that is what I wanted to share with Jan also. The sleepiness is a kind of a amber light happening in the transition. The most important thing is to see the early signs of the sleepiness. If the early signs, if you are ready, then you can see this is the camouflage, that is the changing nature of the mind and the body, and don't try to rush. Let the sleepiness sets in. But occasionally, here and there, again, look at your primary object. While the sleepiness is setting in, then it will be some kind of a spying, some kind of a different outlook. You are looking at yourself from with the sleepiness point of view. Do you get it? Do you understand?
Yes, yes, that does make a lot of sense to me, Bhante.
Yeah. And, thank you. Same thing can happen when the anger arises, when the desire arises, sleepiness arises. Under the light of, or under the influence of the anger, just see the primary object. Under the light of, influence of the desire, just see the primary object. Under the influence of sleepiness, see the primary object, and you can see that is what the sleepiness is going to cover. So we have to be very, very sharp. We have to be very instrumental to make use of the sleepiness and look at the primary object.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Okay, can you hear me, Bhante?
Yeah, now I can hear.
All right. Nice to hear you. My name is Amaran. So I just arrived yesterday evening, but already, yeah. I can set up some context. So I'm already trying to notice how my kind of baseline default mind is trying to hijack the meditation. So for me, this is the mind that sees the world as threatening and wants to meet some expectations by striving and doing something, but the threat is like, I really have to do it. It's really important. So this is something I haven't been noticing so much on previous retreats, but since my last retreat, I think I've done some work outside, like psychological work. So now I understand what's going on. So I'm just trying to observe that. So I'm starting with a pretty mind that's cut off from the body and from proprioception. I'm mostly in, you know, inside my head. And what I'm doing now is just trying to notice this state of threat that normally I don't notice it, but keeps my mind in kind of constant vigilance. And I'm just trying to withhold and feel the sensations and emotions, and then kind of my sense of body expands more. But it goes through the kind of long journey through some difficult emotions, and then it kind of opens up more. So that's my plan, is not to try not to do anything and just wait until this unfolds. Because previously, whatever the instructions were, this mind is interpreting it with this strong striving. So there's even like attending to a sense object, it includes some effort, which kind of doesn't make sense. So I don't know whether it was clear for you.
So whenever distracted, you know you are distracted for this reason or that reason. How do you know you are not distracted? You are in mindfulness. What are the signs of your under the nose symptoms of mindfulness?
Yes. I mean, this is the difficulty for me, because this kind of baseline energy is very subtle, or maybe I'm so much used to it. So there's a subtle internal monologue that sometimes I think I'm not distracted, but actually it's
going on all the time, and I'm attending to some subtle sensations in my head without like realizing that. So to answer your question, well, sometimes I'm trying to just ask the mind the question, like, what's the current intention? Is it just to know, or there's a like a have to in the attitude? Is it I have to know, and that's how I often find that I'm still kind of striving, and that it's still the mindfulness is so not like pure.
To give you a clue, I would say the pure mindfulness you can't explain.
Mm.
No one. So therefore, I am putting you in trouble. But halfway from the distraction to the coming to the mindfulness, from the mindfulness to the distraction, there may be some transitional period where you have your personal experience. This is the way I know I am coming from the bewilderment to at-home situation. This is the way I know I am going from the at-home situation to the bewilderment or unmindfulness. So do you have that kind of a transition where we can communicate?
It's definitely more clear when I have more momentum in my practice. But, well, I would call it, yeah, it feels just like stopping. I don't know, maybe this is how I could describe it. But actually, usually in the beginning, my actually that was one of my questions to you. So so much the difference between my usual state of this vigilance and relaxation is so significant that usually I'm at the beginning of the retreat, I'm still focusing on relaxing and not noticing that even in this state of like an unpleasant kind of vigilance, there may be mindfulness and it's okay. So not in all mind states I can appreciate the fact that I can be home in this place. Does it make sense?
So that what you are trying to explain, I am guessing, I am trying to discriminate whether you are going to picture the concentration or mindfulness. So if you can try, if you can communicate, then as a listener, I may conclude whether you are now going to figure out the concentration or the mindfulness. If it is mindfulness, the transition is no problem. Mindfulness to the bewilderment to the mindfulness. But if you are aiming at concentration, lot of disappointments, lot of self-criticism, lot of backward. So I try to rescue you from this concentration-based explanation to the mindfulness-based interpretation. So that is why I have to give cross questions.
Sorry, I didn't catch the last part.
That is why I am cross questioning you. I am cross-questioning you, putting questions.
I see. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true. I'm. There is striving for some like more samadhi, and because I have some like lot of aversion towards these kind of stressful states, I'm often not noticing the aversion. Which keeps me kind of not mindful because my hidden agenda is actually to reach some kind of balance.
Yeah, so morning we had a discussion in English medium whereby I try to conclude the best thing is earning the mindfulness in an effortless way, not by striving, not by exerting. So soon after conclusion we sum up the talk. But another participant told, effortless come after efforts. Effortless never come at the beginning. You have to put some effort and they are inefficient. After a while only, effortlessness happens. So whenever the effortlessness happens, you have to facilitate it. You have to tell, you can't start from the effortlessness. You have to put some exert energy and effort, and there may be little unsettled situation, but slowly, effortless situation happen, then facilitate it, just like an aeroplane is taking from the turbulent air to the higher altitudes, where less turbulence. So there only you can put autopiloting. But till the plane is going up to 100 meters, the pilot is responsible. So and appreciate this present turbulent, hoping that slowly you will reach effortless situation.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So it's kind of normal, and I shouldn't expect like to feel that I'm home even at the like turbulent stage, or maybe I should also learn to appreciate the this coming back when I am in the turbulent stage.
So you have to always be compassionate for the beginners. Beginners are in the turbulent state. Give all the facilities. After a while, the beginner become little acquainted with. Then the calm situation happen. There you must not exert. But at the beginning, definitely you have to exert. So that is everywhere in the world. Not only in mindfulness. So in mindfulness, we are using it for our benefit. Using it for our purification. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you.
Welcome.
Hello, Bante. My name is Michał. I've arrived yesterday evening as well, so I can only report like what's been going on pretty much today. There are like three things. First, I'm quite surprised that the mind recognizes the retreat setting on its own, and I'm surprised there's more of the awareness that or mindfulness that I then with what I came in, and it came by itself and quite effortlessly. The second is I've noticed during the yogi jobs that the more energetic movements give rise to raga, and the third one is the that there is quite a lot of sleepiness, which is a bit unpleasant. Yet it doesn't really go against being aware at the same time.
Yeah, that the last point that you explained was the sleepiness. So you have to understand whether it is a mind is slippery and jump away from the meditative mood, or the body needs sleepiness. If the body needs sleepiness, 1 hour, 2 hours, 5-6 hours time, okay. But otherwise, the mind play a trick. It's very slippery in jumping off from the this thing and become dozing off, but the body is not sleeping. So that very difficult to discriminate the normal sleepiness or slimy mind. The slippery mind. So the best way is to understand the how is before the sleepiness. What is your successfulness in mindfulness and your primary object? As the sleepiness sitting in, how often you give up the primary object, how often you give up the mindfulness, but the body is not really in a demand of a sleep, but there is a kind of a hiding, there is a kind of a slippery kind, and that indicates the meditation is working now, because your mind is not engaged in the day-to-day interesting things, but repetitive thing is you observing. When such a repetitive thing happen to be face-to-face, our mind is not happy. It is always happy to have varietal entertainment, different moods, different objects and different entertainment. So therefore, knowingly, you have to understand sleepiness is the symptoms it is showing. But it is not, may not be the sleepiness as such, but a kind of a slippery. Mind is not, it shows it's a disinterest. Because the repetitive application to the same object. So repetitive application is something you are appreciating. The outcome, the sleepy mind or slippery mind, is a trick. So we may interpret it as a sleepy, then we are with the wrong flag. So go prepared for these early signs, and then you may get certain amount of relationship with the primary object, even the mind is little slippery. And while you are in the day-to-day activities, you may not be claim as meditation, but if you are looking the situation from the mindfulness or awareness or the diligent point of view, any job you can do diligently and the result towards the mindfulness is the same. Whatever the job you do, you can do, be on the ball, doing it in the for the sake of doing, and then you can understand whether it's sitting or walking meditation or doing a day-to-day activities, the mindfulness can happen. Otherwise, you select, mind is having likings and dislikings for certain jobs, and you are happy with the jobs that you like, you are not happy with otherwise. But the mindfulness never makes such a discrimination. It causes choiceless awareness. Choicelessly you aware two jobs, but the mindfulness is the same. So therefore, you become a scout-like. You become prepared, be prepared. The scouting girl guides, the first and foremost motto is, be prepared for anything. So this called, we call in duties, fulfilling yogi duties, and doing for the sake of doing. And you give the, from the beginning to the middle to the end, equal attention, awareness, but that is a perfect. But when you are doing, you can see mind color is changing from the liking and disliking, that you understand who am I by put into work. And the first you try to explain about the self-retreat, and you as if going in front of a mirror, like you can see yourself rather than with the interaction with people. Interactions are there, but they are not so economically important, politically important, but you can see. So this is a kind of a thing you are investing upon yourself. Otherwise we are utterly extrovert, other world, external. But when you have a self retreat, you be with yourself. So when you are in a bedridden sickness, that can happen. It's a punishment. But now it is not a punishment. Now you yourself do it for yourself because you wanted to know who am I. And when you are in a retreat like that, timetable is a set one. Someone is setting for you. You try to adhere into that. And the menu is set by someone. Your beddings and other amenities decided by someone, but you try to adopt into that. So mindfulness is the most efficient tool because it makes you innocent. It makes you innocent. You are not the boss. Boss is deciding. You are a beginner. Just like pouring water into the cup, the water takes the shape of the cup. Water is not expecting, I must have this and that. So you become a newly born. I call born again Buddhist. Not a born again Christian or Catholic. Born again Buddhist, you are looking at as if a newcomer, as if a newly born baby or a beginner is the most aesthetic thing. It's the most lovely thing in our life. We again become a stranger, a novelty, beginner. More and more you do, you become so innocent, And there's so much of creativity, so much of aesthetic feelings. What a world. Otherwise, world is burning and unfair situation and power craziness and all blah, 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 blah. But when you try to have a self-retreat, ask them to kite, you mind your own business, try to be a beginner. What do you say?
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I'm talking with my Asiatic mind. I don't know how you white guys are thinking about.
Yeah, it's like that was quite a lot of different things that I've heard. So I'm a bit unclear what is the question right now.
So I think Jan can help you because he has been to Sri Lanka and he has been with the Asiatic thinking little. So if you need further clarification, hopefully Jan can help you.
Okay, thank you.
So no more questions, Jan, so we can end up the session.
Yes, Mante, thank you very much. We are looking forward for the afternoon, for us afternoon,
4:30 hour time.
Dhamma talk.
Yeah.